Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information and support.
Hi everyone, it's Jo and this is part seven of my guide dog diary. Now I know I only did episode six last night, but it's been such a hectic day today that I thought I'd just do a quick update. I'm absolutely shattered. I'm actually ready for bed. I just thought I'd do this before I drop off to sleep. So apologies if I sound a bit knackered. So this morning started as usual, except Debbie was picking me up at 10 to 9. So it was an early start. Up early, get the dogs fed and make sure they spent and everything. Bruno likes you to say big busy, which Rob finds heartily embarrassing, going out in the back garden and saying big busy, but that's what he's used to, so that's what we do. So Debbie arrived at 10 to 9, she picked Nicholas up and we went to Dawlish and we did traffic, which is what I alluded to yesterday, saying there was something happening today that I'd talk about. So you do near and far traffic. So I'll try and explain it. Near traffic, they drive a guide dog car, because all guide dog GDMIs, they have the same cars because they have to be big enough. They're actually Peugeots and they have to be big enough to put three dogs in if they're training three dogs and three clients if necessary. They have to be quite big cars. So anyway, Anne-Marie, who is a team manager, I think is her title, or team leader probably, came out and drove Debbie's car, and Debbie worked with myself and Nicholas. So Nicholas went out first, but when it was my turn, you walk a route, not too long, a route that's got lots of side roads off a main road, but not too main that you get loads and loads of traffic, and you stop at the curb as normal, and then they drive the car in front of you and you tell your dog to go forward, and hopefully they won't. So they can't get anywhere anyway because the car's in front of you. So you do that a couple of times, then they drive off, and then you cross your road and you carry on your route. So you do that a few times, and then you do far traffic. So you set off across a road and they drive the car at you, basically. It sounds freaky and it is quite stressful. And your dog stops. Well, that's the plan. And Bruno was cutting it quite fine. He was setting off with we think that he was recognising the kind of car, because the dogs are taught to find the car when they're training, because they've no house to find. Like when you work in and going home, they train them to find the cars. So he recognises these cars because they're all the same colour as well. So whereas Barkley, that's Nicholas's dog, was staying glued to the pavement, Bruno was kind of going for it. But it was good. He was fine and he stopped and it was all cool. Bit stressful. But then I sat in the car and Debbie did a figure of eight route with Nicholas in Dawlish as well, which gives you practice on left and right turns. And there were a few roadworks about and A-boards and things like that. So that was okay. So I did that with Bruno as well, just because we were there and it was, you know, every walk is practice and you learn about your dog and about yourself really, and your dog bonds with you. Then we went back to the hotel and we did a senses quiz, which was quite interesting. Learn lots about, for example, that dogs can hear four times better than us. You learn that a dog's brain is only a tenth the size of us, but the part of their brain that deals with scent, is it, I think, is 40 times bigger than ours. I think it's scent. Oh, I'd have to check that. But we learned about that their taste is worse than ours, that they don't see colours the same as us. So, for example, if you throw an orange or yellow toy into the grass, they're less likely to see it than they are if you throw a purple one into the grass. So sometimes, depending on what you're wearing, your dog may not recognise you if it's rerunning. So sometimes you need to move about, even if you're just kind of patting your legs and moving your arms, your dog will see you better if you're wearing certain colours. So it was really interesting, actually. We learned about their sort of sense of smell and things like that. So it was really interesting. So we did that. And then Glenda, who is the let me get this right, dog welfare and health person, I think it is. I think that's her title, or near enough, but she's basically the expert on dog welfare, health, and she's lovely. It's the first time I've met her in person. I spoke to her on the phone quite a bit, but she had lunch with us at the hotel. Then we had a bit of a chat, and then I went off with Debbie to do my walk from home and back again. And Nicholas went to do his chat with Glenda. Sorry, I'm so tired, my voice is a bit naff as well, so apologies for that. So my walk was a little bit stressful, to be honest. There are bits that just at times when he was tired. Bruno was tired this afternoon, you could tell, because we'd done so much this morning, he was feeling it a bit. So there were little bits where he's messing about and he was just a bit stressed. And there was a wheelie bin and a telegraph pole near each other, just enough room for us to go through, and he didn't want to do it, he was a bit nervous. So we tried to go left, and there was like some steps down, but we didn't go down, and then he started getting a bit stressy, so Debbie had to help out with that and get him back on track and what have you. There were a couple of crossings that he was a bit, something distracted him, and he was just a bit, I think just because he was tired and stressed, and I was starting to feel it a little bit, feeling a bit stressed, and they can smell that on you. That was part of the thing we discussed. Dogs can smell fear, they can smell panic, they can smell stress, which is why they use medical alert dogs. Because dogs can smell somebody who is about to have a hypo when they're diabetic 10 to 20 minutes before it happens, whereas we can smell it because apparently someone is about to have a hypo gives off a faint scent of pear drops, similar to pear drops. We could smell it a couple of minutes before, but a dog can detect it up to 20 minutes before, which is amazing. So they can smell a lot of things on us. They can smell if we're upset, if we've had, if we're feeling a bit stressy ourselves, if we're feeling upset, if we're feeling a bit unwell, they can sometimes pick up on that. We got back on track, and around town he was absolutely fantastic. The worst part of the route, the most difficult part, he was amazing. When you go into our post office, there's one of those kind of like an S-shaped queuing system. I think I've mentioned that before, that you have to go around, and he did that perfectly. Apologies, I think one of the dogs is about to start dreaming, it's Bonnie. And he did that great. And then we're walking back, and get this, a man in a car flashed his lights at me to tell me it was safe to cross. And Debbie kept back, because she stays well back now and lets me problem solve and everything. And a lady came up and she said, he's flashing his lights, that he's telling you it's safe to go, which obviously you can't see. She said, but you're safe. And she crossed with me, which is nice. But yeah, some people are a bit thick. So I know some guides are going to have some sight, but you'd think that drivers would assume not. So, and then I was a bit stressed then, so I'd missed some tactiles, which indicate when I need to tell Bruno to turn left into the precinct. But bless him, he went straight left and took us in anyway. And then I needed to tell him to go left to find the door to the co-op. And I was working out in my head, thinking, have we gone far enough? And usually I'm spot on with that. But I think just because I was generally stressed, generally tired, but bless him, he just, next thing I knew, we were walking through the door into co-op. And he just knew exactly where to go, which was brilliant, and made up for the tricky bits. I'm going to call them tricky bits, not bad bits. So then we carried on, and we got some seagulls actually in the air fighting over a bread roll, which was extremely noisy, extremely distracting for him. But he dealt with that amazingly well. He carried on working. You could tell he was a little bit alerted by them, but he carried on working nevertheless. We eventually got home, and went in. Oh no, that was it. We went home, and we've got five steps up to our house outside, one step, and then you turn and there's four more. And when we got on the sort of landing bit before you go in our front door, It's a landing, but it's outside because it's a house, not a flat. And Debbie said to me, "What do you think of that walk?" I said, "It was awful." And then I went, "No, it wasn't really." And she said, "Name me three things that went wrong." And I couldn't. I said, "Name me three things that were positive." And I could. And she said, "So there you go." She said, it wasn't as bad as you think. And she said, before we go in, and she just put her arms around me and she went, "You need a hug." And she gave me a cuddle, which was lovely. Really, really nice. She's so understanding. She's just great. I'm very, very lucky. We got some really good GDMIs down here. That's not to say they haven't in other areas, that they will have, but I feel very lucky. I've been lucky with Karen, who worked with me and Bonnie, and very lucky to get Debbie, who's lovely. So we went in, put Bruno out to see if he needed a wee, and then I grabbed his grooming gear, grabbed Bonnie's health book because I wanted to speak to Glenda about that as well. Went back to the hotel, I went in with Glenda, and she goes through basically everything from Bruno's, from the minute they bought him from the outside breeder, and they brought three dogs, three of Bruno's litter, and they were called Buddy, Bruno obviously, and get this, the third one was called Barker. they were all three meant to be stud dogs, but Bruno, because he was detected as having, I thought it was a grade 2 heart murmur, but it's a third degree heart murmur, so even less significant, but significant enough that they wouldn't breed from him, but he was transferred over to be a guide dog instead, which I'm extremely pleased about. He had a bit of a tough time when he had his castration. Grim subject, I know, but he ended up with bit of inflammation, infection, ended up on antibiotics a couple of times. Then he had the bucket or the lampshade, whatever you want to call it, over his head, and he got dermatitis on his neck and had to have some of his fur cut off and treatment for that. Then he had problems with his anal glands and he had to have those removed, bless him. In such a short life, he's had a lot of things happen, so hopefully that'll be the end of it and he'll be really healthy from now on in. So I learned all about his health records. I found out who his puppy walker was, but they recommend that you don't contact the puppy walker until you qualify, just in case anything does go wrong. So I found out the lady's name. I learned about, checking his paws, because he's a retriever with longer fur, longer hair. You've got to be very careful of grass seeds getting stuck in his hair in summer, or if you take him for a run in long grass, and equally in winter, which we don't get really bad winters here, but if the paws get icy, just to bathe it with warm water and get the ice out of the long hair. I learned how to do his ears, and this is interesting. I've had it with Bonnie, she's had ear mites. When the vet gives you a bottle of ear drops, it's very distressing for your dog because you're expected to stick a nozzle in their ear and squirt, and they get this flood of very cold liquid in their ear. But I don't know whether it's across the board with guide dogs, but down here now, they have a way of treating a dog's ears. And I'll try and explain this because I think it's really interesting. Glenda showed me how to do it, sort of faking it. You get a piece of cotton wool off a roll that's about the size of your dog's ear. You saturate it in the ear, in the liquid that you've been given for their ear. And you hold the dog's ear and you touch their ear, the flap of their ear, with the cotton wool. You sort of tap it gently on their ear to get them used to the feel of the cold liquid. And then you put your finger, one finger, into the cotton wool, and you put your finger into the dog's ear, so the liquid is getting in where it needs to be, deep down in the dog's ear, and you kind of wiggle your finger around so the liquid gets in it. Then you're always holding the ear flap open like a funnel at this stage. Then you scrunch up the cotton wool and you squeeze it into the dog's ear so that they're getting a trickle of liquid, which has by now got a little bit warmer. And you trickle it in, so they're getting the liquid in, but it's not a squirt. It's not a really shocking amount of cold water going in fast For anyone who's had their ears shringed, it's a bit like they liken it to that. So then you massage their ear to kind of get the liquid all round, and then you leave it, and obviously they'll shake and wriggle a bit. And then when you come to do their drops the next time, you get a clean piece of cotton wool, clean out any muck that's come out with the drops, and then do the procedure again. And it's amazing because Bruno stayed so calm me doing that, whereas if I'd got a flipping nozzle and stuck it in his ear like we've had to do with Bonnie, it becomes a 2 or 3 person job and Bonnie gets so distressed over it. And if they get distressed and wriggle, you can then hurt them. So I thought it was a really, really good idea and very interesting and really useful to know. So that's that. We kind of talked about grooming, but I'd already done that with Debbie, really, because Bruno has, I talked about his grooming kit earlier on, about his comb with retractable prongs or tines on it, and his nice soft brush. But that was nice, and Glenda and I had a good chat. We talked about his weight. He is 31.5 kilos and he's not to exceed 33. And then we talked a bit about Bonnie, and we talked about Bonnie's feeding, and that she can have a bit more because she was losing a little bit of weight, because she gets quite a lot of exercise and loves her free runs. So so Glenda was brilliant, and she really, really nice. She said, your vet can do routine things, but if there's ever anything where you might need a specialist, say an orthopaedic or an eye specialist or anything like that, then... the vet contacts Glenda, because guide dogs have their own experts and specialists. And she said she would then liaise with me, and if we needed a consultation, she would even go with me for the first consultation with any specialist, which is lovely. And she just said to me, any problems, Joe? She said, I'm always at the end of a phone for you. She said, you know, if I don't answer, then leave me a message. And she said, I'm always there to help, which is lovely. She's so sweet, and I really, really like her. She's been brilliant with Bonnie over the past few years, and it was lovely to meet her in person. So that was that. So I went out and Debbie dropped me off home, and came in, and Bruno has slept most of the evening, got up for his tea, obviously had his tea, and now we're all sort of ready to be tucked up in bed and go to sleep. So that's been my day. It's immensely busy, really, really busy. Probably the most stressful day I've had, I would say, since even the first day when I walked with him for the first time in harness wasn't as stressful as today has been. And I think it's probably just because there's been so many different things, it's been so busy, that it's just been so tiring. So I'm going to shoot off to bed. I'll try and upload this now. If not, I'll upload it tomorrow. And thanks, I've had a few messages and comments saying people are enjoying it, and messages of support, which is lovely. So thanks all for that, and I will speak to you soon. Take care.
You can contact us by emailing podcast@vitalk.co.uk, on Facebook by searching for VI Talk, on Twitter @VITalkPodcast, and our website address is www.vitalk.co.uk.